For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's up, good people of the Bad Signal Podcast? It is Friday. It's Friday. Oh, yeah. I'm excited because we have another banger. Listen, we're not here to disappoint anyone. We are continuing our division previews. And I have the best of the best. It's funny because Mike Silver and I work together at NFL Network. I mean, this guy has been, and you will hear him say it, he has covered the 49ers since 1988. So this guy's got stories for days, this guy. Listen, he's one of my very good friends, incredibly talented. He worked at Yahoo Sports. He worked for Sports Illustrated. Hey, he wrote the book about Kurt Warner that became a movie, American Underdog. If you've heard about that, yeah, it only took 21 years. He has so much attached to his resume, and he's also just a funny, funny guy. Wildly entertaining. We got plenty of stories jam-packed into this hour preview of the NFC West. What is more pertinent than the NFC West right now? I mean, DK Metcalf just got a 3-year, $72 million contract. We talk about Debo Samuel. We talk about the gorgeous Jimmy Garoppolo and his football skills. Nonetheless, we talk about the Los Angeles Rams, and hey, yeah, we talk a little homework, Kyler Murray. So tune in, strap in, turn up the volume, because you're going to laugh. I promise you. Me and Silver, we get right into it with a great story from our days at NFL Network. So I want to come here and remind you as well. We got some great things coming out on Better Edge. BetterEdge.com/Courtney. That is your betting platform. 45 states. It's legal. Peer-to-peer marketplace. No VIG, no fee. You know the deal. But Better Edge is coming out. It's going to make it so much easier to fade Fallon. We're coming out with copies and fade tickets. So listen, if I post something and I say, hammer the Bills in week one against the Rams, and you like my bet, and I post it on the Better Edge platform, you can copy and you can just ride my ticket all the way, or you can just hit fade. Say, listen, fade Fallon all day. That's coming up. We're coming out with some NFL futures that you can bet. That will be in 2 weeks on the platform. So anyways, get on our platform, get going. BetterEdge.com gives you $20 for free when you use the code Courtney. And without further ado, I won't waste much more of your time. Here is Mike Silver on the NFC West. Well, damn, it took long enough. My old buddy from NFL Network, Mike Silver, he's got a bunch of new gigs. He's working for The Volume with the podcast. He's got some stuff with Bally Sports. And he is still the coolest OG of all time. He hazed me the first weekend we had orientation at NFL Network. It was myself and Jane Slater. And Mike Silver was like, oh, no, 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 you're not going to bed. And made us drink and drink and drink until 2. And then I missed the bus the next morning. And whether or not that was the beginning of the end for me at the network.
I don't know if it was that. I just know that James Palmer and I were offended by the notion that you guys had to turn in early because it was a big day tomorrow. We were like, yo, we're at the bungalow in Santa Monica. You guys are rookies last time I checked. And that means that it got our competitive juices flowing along with some other juices mixed with tequila. And yeah, we drank late. And then I remember Slater, I got on the bus, you know, they're like, be on by 7, it's leaving, because they were taking us over actually to Culver City to the network for publicity shots. Awesome. And then I got in the bus at like 6:59 and 53 seconds, and Slater's in there in the back looking like, you know, she's embalmed. She's just like, I am dead. And then she gets a call, and she's like, yeah, Fallon's going to meet us over there. And I'm like, wow, okay.
I forgot to set an alarm. I got there on time.
I know. And you guys took beautiful photos. I if they photographed me, I don't even want to think about what that looked like.
I just remember being, then we had to sit through the Snapchat orientation, and me and Jane, and they were like, oh, let's all exchange our Snapchat names. And me and Jane are like, we're making fake ones. I'm not having our bosses follow us on Snapchat.
You know, Courtney, I know you're acquainted with my daughter, Natalie. And I know that when she was about 12 or 13 is when I became aware that Snapchat existed. And I was part fascinated, like, wow, they found a way to sext and have it disappear. That's amazing. And part horrified. She's my only daughter and oldest of three kids. And I remember at one point, you know, I think maybe after that meeting where they're telling us, you gotta get on Snapchat, I ran up by her and she goes, you get Twitter, I get Snapchat. You are not getting zero. So I've never been on.
Well, it's long since dissolved, since Instagram stories has, you know, become taken over, and that's what they do in these big, large media factories and companies. Well, Mike, you have moved on from the network. I have moved on from the network. We are both somewhat tied to Bally Sports National. Are you excited to share your expertise? Because you posted this picture of a credential of you've been covering the San Francisco 49ers since 1992.
I actually started in 1989, but I found the 92 credential, if this will up. But I dressed up for it. So back in Rockland, where the 49ers used to have training camp, it was very, very hot and no shade. So I would wear a big straw hat. They were calling me Huck Finn early on. And of course, I had the prescription Ray-Bans going. So this was 1992. I actually had it shrunk by then. The original hat was even worse. But training camp used to be much more of a thing. They were almost all away from the facility, and they were long. They were like 5 weeks. So we would literally rent an apartment up there. I worked first for the Sacramento Union, but then the Santa Rosa Press Democrat, and some other writers and I would rent like a 2 or 3 bedroom place and move in for like 5 weeks. It was wild.
Did you smoke a prescription doobie before practice every once in a while?
Well, back then it was 1989 to 1994. So the only prescription would have been from Dr. Dre and it would not have been official. So I probably didn't risk a felony. I know that early on, you know, another writer, Richard Weiner, and I went out to a Mexican place with Joe Montana and Steve Bono, who was the third string quarterback. And, you know, I grew up a 49er fan in LA, but like born in San Francisco, grew up a 49er fan. Joe Montana took my, you know, heartbreaking childhood team and made them magical and the best ever. So I had some feelings for Joe Montana before I met him and had to cover him. And he turned out to be awesome. And we're, you know, all of a sudden we're getting tequila shots. And they brought the bill over, and of course Joe's gonna pay. He was making a lot of money, and I was like, I have to pay this. And he's like, and I'm like, I have to fill out an expense report. And back then it was by hand. Have to fill out an expense report that says tequila shots with Joe Montana. Like, you just gotta let me do it. So and you know, Joe Montana and I still have managed to purchase lots of alcohol in each other's presence, and I have not had to pay for all of it. So it's
no, that's a great idea. Have you hung out with Jimmy Garoppolo? Because, you know, he's kind of the biggest topic. He's the biggest topic of the day. Of course they passed him on his physical with his shoulder. Any team would be stupid not to pass him if they're trying to move him. And Mike Shanahan saying the other day, hey, we have officially moved on to Trey Lance. Any time with Jimmy. Handsome guy. He would out-handsome you.
I mean, first of all, he's so handsome, it's almost like you almost feel like you're in a movie. Like, it's one thing if, like, I'm around handsome dudes plenty of times, and I'm like, yeah, whatever, that guy's handsome. Yeah, you know, TV, everyone's like, people see me on TV, and they're like, wow, he really knows a lot. He's really smart. But some people go on TV, they're like, damn, we know why that person's on. So, yeah, I'm used to it. Like, I did The Aftermath for 6 years with Rhett Lewis as my host. So, yeah, I'm used to handsome. But Jimmy's like a different level of handsome. It's almost like, you know, you know, you have to, like, you know, 99.9% of the time I'm like not only happily married, but I remember like, wow, I love women. But with Jimmy, I'm kind of like, I love women, right? Because he is dreamy. I have not actually hung out with him. I spent a lot of time talking to him. I had wrote a column off of the NFC Championship game this last year where he kind of confided some things in me after the game, and it was really cool. I'm a huge fan. He does not, he's not very good about returning texts, but I don't take that personally because apparently he doesn't return George Kittle's texts or Kyle Shanahan's texts or anyone else's either. But yeah, he is, they're in the process of trying to find him a new home. It's a weird situation though, because, you know, he went and got his shoulder, his throwing shoulder, surgically repaired right after the season, kind of on his own. And that killed the trade market. And so, whereas Baker, the Browns really needed to get rid of him because his money was guaranteed and they'd already given all that money to Deshaun Watson guaranteed and there's a cap and all that.
Yeah.
Jimmy's is not. So the 49ers really don't have to do anything immediately, but they recognize, look, we traded 3 ones to move up and take Trey Lance. He's the guy. We want to make this transition to him. Now Jimmy's, you know, healthy or close to healthy, but the market is really cooled. So there could be an injury somewhere where it's like, you know, Teddy Bridgewater in 2016 suffered that horrible injury, and all of a sudden the Vikings were like, we'll give the Eagles a first round pick for Sam Bradford. But hopefully that doesn't happen to anyone else, because that was horrible for Teddy. Yeah. And if it doesn't, then you're wondering who's going to take Jimmy, even if he agrees to cut the contract. Maybe they'll just cut him. And if they cut him, then someone will sign him. But it's going to be tough for Jimmy to come in and make an immediate impact. So he may really be looking at 2023 as his chance. It's going to be interesting to see how it evolves.
Well, I mean, is he willing to take a step back and just kind of like be the number two quarterback in a quarterback room? I wouldn't assume as much.
Yeah, but, you know, his options are going to be limited timing-wise. So that may be the smart play, you know, if you're the Giants or a team where the number one is likely to be on the bench soon and you like Brian Daboll. You know, if I'm Jimmy, I would consider that. But do I think he's one of the best 32 quarterbacks on earth? Absolutely. So he should be a starter. I defend him a lot. I know he's not perfect. And I know there are some things that have driven some people crazy, but man, he does a lot of good things, including something that the 49ers offense has been constructed in the image of. He hangs in under pressure and confidently delivers the ball very accurately into very tight spaces. And so Deebo Samuel, George Kittle, Brandon Ayuk, those guys are so good after the catch. And, you know, the 49ers have gone and got guys like that to take advantage of what Jimmy does in such an elite way. And so if Trey Lance isn't able to do that well, and I'm sure there are a lot of things Trey Lance is going to be able to do well, I would think, just based on the profile. He's unbelievably smart and skilled. But if he can't do that well, and there's some question about that, it's going to be an adjustment. You know, Kyle Shanahan can change the offense, you know, play calling wise, but personnel wise, they're very much locked into that Jimmy model.
What does the absence of Mike McDaniel, who was the architect, I've heard this a number of different times. He's also pulled a bunch of, I've talked about this on the podcast. He pulled a bunch of different personnel and coaching staff off of the 49ers. And it's just slowly, there's a kind of this imminent idea that the Niners are really going to be showing that they're missing something this year. Would you say that's correct?
It's such a great question, Courtney. I'm really glad you've asked it. So I've known Mike McDaniel for a long, long time. And I've kind of had an understanding from an early stage of just how important he is. And schematically, he's brilliant, especially in the run game. What they've been able to do to be ahead of the curve in the run game with the outside zone, with the backside plays that just catch people off guard. He's a huge, huge resource for Kyle. He also has been with Kyle mostly unabated, you know, for, you know, a decade and a half. Okay, so it's a big deal. And so of all the people that Kyle has lost or could lose, that was always the one that I thought, man, he really doesn't want to lose him. He also filled this great role where Kyle can be very, you know, demanding and prickly and not great at communicating with other coaches sometimes, but Mike understood how to communicate Kyle to the rest of the staff and could communicate the rest of the staff to Kyle in kind of an efficient way that shielded some of the other coaches from some of that direct communication at times. So in those ways, he's hugely valuable. Now, I also, and I think he's going to be fascinating in Miami. I went out and saw him there. I'm so
big time rooting for that part.
So excited. Now, I do want to say this, though, because I don't want to give the wrong impression. He is all of those things, and he is hugely valuable. And I am also very curious to see what it's like without him. I don't want to, though, the caveat is that Mike is probably a genius, but Kyle is also a genius, football-wise. And so you are losing someone really, really important to you that's been a huge part of it. But as far as scheme and understanding those principles and innovating and thinking in an abstract way and knowing the running game and how it's married with the pass, Kyle, may be at the very top of the world. And his father, Mike, was at the top of the world, in his time. So yeah. I still believe that all of the things that they need to have that scheme be cutting edge are there with Kyle. And he's meanwhile got some up and coming guys like Bobby Slowick. And by the way, a revived Chris Foerster, one of the great comeback stories in NFL history. Chris Foerster.
Chris Foerster from the Dolphins?
That's right.
Oh my God, that guy?
Yes, he is sitting in Mike McDaniel's old office as the de facto Mike McDaniel replacement. He's an offensive line mastermind, and he's helping Kyle, especially with the running game, keep it cutting edge. So Chris Foerster, we all laugh because that crazy video that surfaced.
He was doing cocaine in the Dolphins.
He had sent a video of himself snorting a white substance, saying, I'm going to a meeting, presumably to run a Dolphins offensive line meeting. And he had sent it to a prostitute who at the time was kind of his de facto soulmate in his warped mind. But Chris Foerster, who went to rehab, lived in a halfway house, turned his life around, quietly joined the 49ers eventually as a consultant, and has worked his way all the way back to offensive line coach and now run game coordinator. He is now sitting in Mike McDaniel's old office and going to meetings, if not daily, very, very regularly, and doing great.
That really just made my day. I was like, wait a minute. I had friends that were on the Dolphins coaching staff, and I was texting them, and they're like, this can't be right.
Well, Courtney, think about this.
They're all the coaches. Like, the coaches were like, no, this isn't real.
Yeah,
like,
it's extraordinary. Now, listen, think about how crazy this is. There's been a lot of turnover on that staff in addition to McDaniel, but one stroke of fortune for Kyle Shanahan is this. Mike McDaniel almost certainly was taking Chris Foerster with him wherever he went, except for one place, which is where he got the job. So Mike McDaniel, if he goes into 30 other buildings as the head coach, goes, okay, here's what I'm thinking for staff. And by the way, Chris Foerster, in that building, when he was going through it as he's getting ready to be named head coach, Mike McDaniel did not have the balls or the juice in that moment to say, hey, I was thinking, because they're like, yo, the dude who did the lines in our building before he ran a meeting and then put it on video and sent it to a prostitute. No, we're not there yet.
This is too good. This is too good. As the great Kendrick Lamar would say, poetic justice.
Yeah.
Poetic justice, that is. We can go a couple of different ways here, but on the subject of Mike McDaniel, the architect, Deebo Samuel, him demanding that he wants out. I mean, obviously there's a sense of unhappiness, but there's also a sense that Mike McDaniel was the one that created this sort of like running back hybrid wide receiver position that made him so indefensible, in the games that the 49ers were playing. Now, DK Metcalf just signed a 3-year, $72 million extension that includes $58 million guaranteed, a $30 million signing bonus, the most for a wide receiver. Where does this set the market for a guy like Deebo Samuel? It seems like the money just keeps getting hotter and hotter. The line, demarcation, it just keeps getting higher and higher. But when you're Deebo Samuel, what kind of money are you asking for? And are you looking at this deal and you're saying, all right, so where am I worth?
Yeah, I think he's looking for top of the market. And this would be, if I were Deebo Samuel, I would say it this way. I'd go, look, that's amazing that when you were 3-5 and your season was going to crap, you partly turned your season around, Kyle Shanahan, by basically making your running game, basically making me the focal point of your running game and using me to get a lot of those rushing yards that freed up play action. And you almost went to the Super Bowl doing that. And I put my body on the line to do that. And by the way, running backs don't make that much money and they don't get second or certainly third contracts very often. So I'm shortening my career arguably and playing a less lucrative position, moonlighting, helping you turn your team around. And that's all good because I'm a team player and we almost went to the Super Bowl, but I got to get my money now because unlike DK Metcalf, you know, I'm assuming an even bigger physical risk and probably shortening my career. So I think it's very understandable if you're Deebo, you're like, look what I've done and don't penalize me for playing partly running back, incentivize that. And Courtney, I also wonder, Jimmy was so good at getting him the ball in those tight spaces. Maybe he's reacting to maybe he's not quite sure from what he's seen from Trey Lance that it's going to be like that accuracy wise. Yeah. And so all of that, because clearly something happened. It went from like, yeah, we almost made the Super Bowl to like, I don't even want to talk to you all. I want my money now. I think something will get done because it's the smart thing on all sides. But yeah, if I'm Deebo, I don't think DK Metcalf's deal makes me want to take less than I was asking for.
No, absolutely not. Well, then on the other flip side, you're talking about Jimmy Garoppolo. That's got to be a more enticing spot. And we know general manager John Schneider is one of the greats in the league. Very funny, very savvy as well. Very savvy GM. Could a trade partner to the Seattle Seahawks happen?
People say no because it's in the division. And I would remind them that the Eagles traded Donovan McNabb to Washington. The Patriots traded Drew Bledsoe to the Bills. So when you want to get rid of a guy bad enough and you're not worried and you think you've got someone you like and you're not worried about that team, you'll do it. Now, are the 49ers worried about the Seahawks? Well, on one level, you'd say they should be. They've lost a lot to the Seahawks the last few years, but they seem to me to be clearly rebuilding. And now, I fell into this trap once before. I sat with John Schneider late in 2017. I kind of got a sense of what was coming and they were going to rebuild around Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner. And I thought, well, 2018 is a lost season for them. And they proved me wrong. They made the playoffs even after losing all those great players like Sherman and Bennett and all that. Now, I think this is a bigger rebuild, losing Russell Wilson, losing Bobby. Yeah. And so if you tell me the Seahawks think they can compete this year, then yeah, go get Jimmy because he's better than Drew Lock and Geno Smith, in my opinion. But I don't know if they want to, now on the other hand, they have Pete Carroll, who's, not young. And I don't think he's down with the whole, hey, we'll get good in a few years, but if I thought Jimmy was going to put him over the edge and like make him a contender, I'd be like, what are you doing? But maybe they're content to take their lumps. So I think it could happen if the Seahawks are into it. I just don't know if the Seahawks are into it.
Yeah. Well, it seems like we've already knocked off two teams of the NFC West, and it's just happened so organically. I was going to have you come on here and talk AFC West, but nope, we're switching gears. We're just going to roll through the rest of the division on our preview here. Are you visiting? I know you are stuck at home with COVID face. Poor Mike. I hope you feel better. But are you going to planning on visiting any training camps?
Yes, Courtney, and it will depend upon when I'm cleared from the COVID list. And listen, man, I don't want to complain.
You're physically unable to perform list right now. You're popping.
Yeah, I'm okay now. I don't want to complain. It's, you know, obviously it's been a deadly virus 2+ years. Luckily, I had a bunch of shots and, you know, I had a long, long run without catching it. So, you know, it's my time. But, yeah, if I can get cleared off this list, Courtney, I would like to at least hit some camps, you know, on the West Coast where I live. And, you know, I'm thinking of trying to start with a, you know, that Ram, Charger, Cowboy, L.A. Vortex, and then the Niners who are closer to me. And I did spend a little time in Vegas and spent some time with Dave Ziegler, who is the Raiders' new GM, who I'm really excited about. So I am left coast focused at the moment until I get my strength back.
Okay. I know. I'm excited for Dave Ziegler. I just am hoping that he doesn't succeed so much more than New England Patriots, because he's just stealing every single player that used to work inside the halls of one Patriot place in Foxborough, Massachusetts. Let's talk about those Los Angeles Rams. God damn. Fuck those picks, man. Is there anything the listener doesn't care about? I mean, like, he is just throwing caution to the wind. Why doesn't the salary cap exist?
Yeah. So I like this, Courtney. I like how they go after it. And I did a thing for Bally with Kevin Demoff, the team president, who, you know, is a tone setter on this. Sean, obviously, is the major tone setter, McVay, and Les, you know, would be the third pillar there. But really, you know, every time I suggest a team be aggressive, especially the Packers, who I would take to task for not maximizing having the, you know, unprecedented gift of back-to-back first ballot Hall of Famers. The 49ers had them in Montana and Young, but not for 30 years consecutive. Favre and Rodgers, and they've won two Super Bowls and been to three, and that's underachieving. And in my opinion, it's because their attitude has been, well, those guys will get it done. Why do we have to be aggressive? We'll be passive and build through the draft. And I say, load up when you have one of those guys, go for broke and maximize the window. And there's a very, very tiny window left with Aaron Rodgers, and then it'll all be gone. But meanwhile, the Bucks in 2020 and the Rams last year were teams that went all in and said, screw the future, and were rewarded in those cases. And it doesn't always work, but they were rewarded with championships. So the Rams, yeah, fans are always like, wait, how can they fit all those guys under the cap? How can they trade all those picks away? Here's how. It's an organizational philosophy, and you can play salary cap tricks, and people say, oh, well, you're going to have to pay the Piper later. Kind of. Usually no, because the cap just keeps going up and you have to make some hard choices, but it's not cataclysmic. It was more pronounced because of COVID and the cap actually going down for the only time ever. But you can, the cap is a myth. Usually when teams whine about the cap, it's they want to get rid of a guy and they're just using that as an excuse. Now, you can't do everything, but you can do what the Rams do and stay aggressive. And as far as picks, yeah, picks are important, but, you know, would you rather have the ability to pick someone, or would you rather have a player you think can make an impact right away? And if you believe that with later round picks, you can find people who your coaching staff can develop and fit into your system and have success with, then you're more willing to take those risks. So I like the way they do it. I think it's cool. And I like it because every time I make comments about aggressive player acquisition, you've got these not only just naysaying fans on social media, but you've got actual cap dorks who will come on who I guess maybe do it for a living somehow on
Excel,
analytics.
Excel sheets. On
and they're like, yeah. And I'm like, yeah, okay, buddy. I came in the DeBartolo, Jerry Jones, the beginning of the cap years, DeBartolo and Carmen policy. And guess what? They could never fit Deion Sanders under the cap. They did. They both won championships because of it. And, you know, I've been doing this a long time. I love what the Rams are doing because of the naysayers. And yeah, it might all blow up. And last year, if Jaquiski Tartt holds onto that pass interception in the NFC Championship game, Stafford's probably, you know, being crushed for throwing all those picks, and the 49ers beat the Rams again and it didn't work. And people say, oh, the Rams went all in and it didn't work. And they would have been right. And it's a fine line, but I applaud them for having the guts to try. And they're trying again this year, and good for them.
It seems as though everyone, and when I say everyone, I'm saying the Peanut Gallery, or there's various different, who was it? The Tears article for The Athletic and that defensive coordinator. For some reason, part of me thinks it's Jim Schwartz.
I have a policy against attempted source outing, because it's been done to me a lot. Sometimes people have gotten it right. Sometimes they've gotten it wrong.
Okay.
I think it's a dangerous thing because it's a league of paranoia where people could lose jobs because they're suspected of being a source. So I don't do it for that reason. And I also think it's bad for business. I want people to continue to tell me everything, and I have a lot of them. So I don't want anyone ever speculating about my sources. They're usually wrong. Yeah. So you are free to do that. I will not participate in that just as a matter. It's like one of the few rules I have, Courtney. I will make you drink till 2 a.m. I will not judge you when you don't get on the bus, but I will not do that.
Okay. Well, that's not really what I was getting at, but I wanted to mention that because I was thinking, that sounds like Jim Schwartz. He's kind of an asshole. I was never really such a fan. However, everyone seems to pick one quarterback before the season. They just want to absolutely rip to shreds. This year, it's Lamar Jackson.
I don't like that.
From that. I don't know. I'm very pro Lamar, and I'm very upset that that quote is what I'm talking about. It sounded very personal, and Lewis Riddick really, really spoke very well.
Yeah, I don't like it for a lot of reasons, but you know, there's been this notion out there that, you know, first there was this thing where it's like, you know, the Ravens, maybe instead of paying Lamar, they just go draft a new one every 4 years. And I'm like, oh yeah, you're going to find another Lamar.
Yeah.
Sure. And that, you know, there's this weird, I think because Hollywood Brown got out and they've had trouble getting some guys. So that's real. There is a real thing among some receivers. Like, I don't like that offense. I can't get mine in that offense. And maybe that's going to be harder for the Ravens to attract certain elite receivers. And that's a thing. And that's the way they run their offense. But this notion that Lamar is not playing at an unbelievably elite level is crazy to me. And, you know, I mean, people are talking about Kyler, who just got paid. And Kyler's done some cool things. Kyler's never stepped up and played well in a big game in the NFL yet, and I think he will, but he's had chances with playoffs on the line and then in the playoffs, and he's kind of laid an egg. Lamar, who lost the playoff game when they were the number one seed, went to Tennessee and won a big playoff game the next year. And in 2020, Courtney, I watched all those games at home, and you know, I don't cheer in the NFL like a fan would cheer. I've got my friends that I'm happy for, but I'm not like an NFL fan. But because I'm sitting there watching at home, watching that playoff game when they were playing Tennessee, which had knocked them out the previous year, and it's a crisis moment, and Lamar kind of fans out and puts his foot in the ground and then ends up running 60-whatever yards for the pivotal touchdown. When he planted that first – when he made that first cut – I screamed involuntarily. I was just like, ah, like that's how, you know, like that's how moved I was by what he did. And he's done some things throwing the ball that are equally eye catching. He was just doing what he had to do to win that game in that moment. But I think Lamar is a G. I think, you know, I think you would rather have him than most quarterbacks on this earth. And it's only even a conversation because he's playing in the time of Mahomes, who is so mind-meldingly great. And now we see Herbert and Josh Allen and some of these guys who just look so young and special. But I think Lamar's in that group. I think he's done more in bigger games than Deshaun Watson has to this point in his career. Certainly more than Kyler, as we said. So, you know, there are some guys like Rodgers and Brady and Russell Wilson who obviously accomplish more and are elite and more accomplished. But of that next group of young people, yeah, there's Mahomes, but I think Lamar's right in there.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I actually, even before last season, put together a piece, and I might drop it again because I think he was dead. He around this time last year, he caught COVID again, or he was like injured at the beginning of the training camp. But I put together a video that argued that Lamar would have another MVP season. And, wow. You know, I just think, I mean, the accuracy levels, and there was really no dip. When you look at the numbers, and I have to go pull them back up again, but Mike, I completely agree with you. And a lot of people said, oh, his accuracy. It's just, no, he actually got more accurate over the course of the year when everyone was criticizing him. He really stepped back. He really took a lot more chances. And obviously, you know, that includes having the ability to, you know, to throw into tighter windows and has a higher expectation of, you know, having pass breakups or interceptions or whatnot. But he made a lot smarter decisions. And he made a lot more aggressive decisions. He was a more complete quarterback. And I would not doubt that Lamar is going to, I think Lamar is, you know, in a great system down there in Baltimore. And, you know, I think that he's going to impress a lot of people. Part of what I was trying to get at before we kind of went on this tangent, Mike, was that they pick Lamar Jackson as the guy for everyone to hate. Last year, it was Matthew Stafford. So where does Matthew Stafford rank? I mean, they were ripping him. Matthew Stafford is poo-poo this and, you know, all-time stat Pat leader. He went out and won a Super Bowl. So where would you rank him in the top 10 of quarterbacks? Because, you know, I watched him those few years over there in Detroit, and that man can sling the ball around. I don't think it's any fluke.
Well, we knew he was very tough, and we knew he had an incredible arm, and we knew he, you know, brought that team from out of nowhere, from behind in key moments a lot. Yeah. But, you know, I think a lot of those criticisms going into last season were justified in fairness, you know, had not won a playoff game. And, you know, at some point, I know it's hasn't been the ideal franchise, but at some point we like to see people elevate. And, but, you know, I could sit here and tell you, I think he threw a lot of picks down the stretch and it wasn't always perfect, but it doesn't really matter at this point because he could just be like, can't really see the screen right now, Mike, because that giant ring is blinding me. And you know what? I want to just say flat out, like, you know, Super Bowls talk, winning a Super Bowl talks. And, you know, the pass he threw to Kupp, who got open against Tampa after Brady with that insane comeback from 27-3 down in the playoffs was a big, big moment. He had some big moments in the NFC Championship game and Super Bowl, despite having made some mistakes. You know, I would say, as someone who's very close to Jared Goff, and talk about a quarterback getting shit, oh my God.
Yeah,
but as someone who's very close to him and has been very, very highly sensitive to, you know, the shit he takes, if Jared Goff had thrown some of the picks Matthew Stafford threw down the stretch last year in big games, I feel like the internet would have exploded. That said, it doesn't matter. Matthew Stafford left Detroit, went to the Rams, came up big, won a Super Bowl. So you have to put him in that top group right now because he went out and earned it. So I will give very little resistance when it comes to people talking about how great Matthew Stafford is. Good for him.
Yeah. final team on our final team on our NFC West preview here with Mike Silver, the great Mike Silver. Mike, how many hours of film do you watch a week? I think you know what I'm getting at. Well,
does it count when I'm playing video games or watching TV? Because I think the way to measure it now, based on what the Cardinals say, is it has to be 100% undivided attention. I cannot tell you that I watch enough film per week to qualify for that kind of payday from the Arizona Cardinals, but I can tell you that I do watch a lot of, say Curb Your Enthusiasm when that new season comes, or yeah. Peaky Blinders, you know. So if the show is good enough, you will have my undivided attention.
Okay. So if the Cardinals season goes 10-0 and they don't bust for the rest of the seven games, then it would be worth watching. Is there anything like more anticlimactic than an Arizona Cardinals Cliff Kingsbury led football
I have so many answers that I could give that probably would
just do it. Give me the best one.
So, you know, listen, I would say this. That clause is understandably getting a lot of attention, and I would assume Kyler did not want it out there or in the contract. So whether the Cardinals put it out or put it in the contract, knowing it would probably get out, that's on them. But I do have some sympathy for the Cardinals in this way. Kyler's a tough one. They had Josh Rosen, who they had traded up to get very high. Mm-hmm. They then said, screw it. We have the number one pick. We're taking Kyler. And he's delivered. He turned them from a team that was losing into a team that's been relevant. He's played very well at times. And so now it's time to pay him. And so, you know, you've kind of got to pay him. And the market rate is high right now. Mm-hmm. And I'm not worried about Michael Bidwell's actual money, but about cap, impact on cap, because it's a little real, even though I said it wasn't real. Yeah. It still matters a little. So on one hand, you got to pay him. On the other hand, I can understand why the Cardinals were feeling like they were in a little bit of a box, because he has not come through the way you'd want him to. You know, the year before, they almost made the playoffs and they kind of wilted down the stretch. He sat out a game with what seemed like a vague type of injury at the time. And he didn't really step up and carry them. And, in fairness to Kyler, Cliff Kingsbury's teams have a history of fading down the stretch in both college and the NFL. And they did fade that year. And then last year, they had that amazing start. And I thought last year, based on what I'd heard coming out of that building the previous year, and how disappointed and frustrated the owner was, I thought there was implosion potential. And I kind of said that. And then I was like, well, missed that one. They're undefeated. But then it finally started leveling off. And, Kyler again didn't put them on his back late. And then in the playoff game in LA, he just looked kind of
lost,
not ready for prime time. And it wasn't just him. And listen, they went and gave Cliff and Steve Keim extensions too. So they decided, we're giving everyone extensions, we're going for it. But I understand, if you were the Cardinals, why you were feeling a little hesitant about doing it. And if that was your hedge, putting in the homework clause, then, whatever. It's your team, it's your money. But don't be surprised when it gets out. And maybe they didn't mind it getting out, but I think Kyler minded.
I think there's a couple more clauses that are supposedly coming down the stretch. And hopefully, Steve Keim, if he's a smart enough owner, he'll put the kibosh on all of that. Because
he's the GM. That's on the
general manager. Yes. Bidwell is the owner. Forgive me. He called a press conference today to talk about the clause, the homework clause.
Kyler did, yeah.
Listen, if you're just going to put like the mannequin head in front of the Zoom and then be sleeping on the couch or playing video games, just let us know. Let us know now.
I would say this.
All COVID tricks, my guy.
I mean, in fairness, I think, and this goes back to the Lamar thing. I mean, in fairness, black quarterbacks have reasons to be sensitive about some of these things, given the history and the way the you know, things have played out and things people say and some of the
bullshit
stereotypes.
I find that to be so ridiculous.
And let's be honest, the climate in our country, some of the things that have been said openly at the highest levels in the last 7 years that were not ever, had not been okay to say publicly for a long, long time, and understandably. So on the other hand, I would say, I'll never forget, Courtney, Ben Roethlisberger's second year. He takes the Steelers to the Super Bowl. I'm working for Sports Illustrated. I go up to Pontiac, Michigan, where they're staying before the Super Bowl, and have some time with Ben on the Friday, 2 days before. We're sitting in a room, we're talking, and at one point he just says to me, you know, I don't really deal with that film watching stuff. I know people say it's really overrated. I'm just not a big film watching guy. And I'll never forget the sensation, Courtney, like, as I'm writing it down and looking into his eyes, I'm feeling Peyton Manning's presence like over my shoulder and feeling Peyton's head exploding. And I know that when Peyton sees the quote, he's going to just absolutely lose his mind. And so I think what I would say is not everyone has to watch film like Peyton Manning. No one probably ever will, but like fake it a little bit. Just be like, yeah, you know, film watching is important and so is feel for the game. But, you know, and Kyler did have some quotes last year in a New York Times article that kind of opened the door to this where he's like, yeah, I'm more of an intuitive player, but whatever. I understand why Kyler's a little bit bummed.
Well, Patrick Mahomes even admitted, he's like, yeah, I started like actually studying teams halfway through the season.
I didn't see that.
I think it was his first. His first year or his second year?
Oh, wow.
He didn't say that. He said, I wasn't really reading defenses until halfway through the season.
I think what that he meant is, I wasn't, I was trying, but not getting, I don't know. Listen, Patrick Mahomes is a perfect creation and can do no wrong. And if anyone ever says otherwise, I will fight them. As I've said, as I used to say on NFL Network, if loving Patrick Mahomes is wrong, I don't want to be right.
Well, you're always right. You always do right by my book. Talk about your new job. So, I mean, yeah. So you came. Speaking of the Rams, Kurt Warner, you wrote the book that became a movie.
I know.
How funny was that?
It only took 21 years.
Oh my God! Mike Silver.
Yeah, what a pleasant surprise. I have it here somewhere. Let me grab a copy here. Yeah, that's the book, All Things Possible, which 21 years later became American Underdog. And then my beautiful wife and I got to go to a red carpet premiere at Chinese Theater in Hollywood. But so Courtney, listen, Kurt's story was so extraordinary. I just don't think there's ever been anything like it in football and few things like it in sports. And I was so, you know, I wrote the first big story on him in Sports Illustrated. And, you know, off of that Super Bowl, we sold that book and I wrote it. And so when people are like, can you believe it got made into a movie? I'm like, yeah, I can believe it because I really thought it was that good a story. I'm surprised that 21 years later it did, but I'm really happy it did. And, you know, the movie was very faithful to the book. Timeline and factual and everything. And I just remember walking out of the theater, that giant Chinese theater for the premiere. And I thought, it's so corny, this movie, but it's true corny. Like it, you know, it's a little over dramatized, but that's really what happened. And I was there and it was really awesome. And so that was great. And a really nice kind of surprise after all these years.
Did someone play you as the journalist?
I did not.
On casting, or they're here's a check. Here's a check, Mike.
I got a check, but not for that. But I did a book with Dennis Rodman and a bunch of other stuff back in the day, and there was this cheesy kind of made for TV movie, which dates me, back then, that came out that I never saw, but my sister watched it and she goes, yeah, there was this unnamed Reporter, Sports Illustrated guy hanging out with him with kind of like, you know, curly black hair and like glasses and like kind of loud. And she's like, that's definitely you. And then the other great thing was, you know, there's the famous the Fail Mary game in 20.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, you love that picture. I see that picture often. It's that one in the Steve Kerr, which that's going to
be. The officiating lockout. So that's me on the field after the game, seeing Aaron Rodgers. And I'm going, what the fuck just happened? Because I really didn't know. And he's going, what the fuck? Because he knew. And that was the simultaneous possession atrocity ruling in the end zone. And then apparently I learned that night, because it was before I worked at NFL Network. I was at Yahoo Sports. But apparently you can say an F-bomb on live national television if you speak for America, because it went viral. It became a meme. It was right into the Monday Night Football cameras. And so I can't remember why we were on this, Courtney. This is what happens when you get really old. Hold on. We're going to backpedal here. Okay. Wow. Woo. Anyway.
Oh, things working. Oh, the guy, the movie that your sister saw that was a made for TV movie.
Oh yeah. Oh, right. So later, there was a South Park episode.
Oh no. Come
on. And my kids are huge South Park fans, and especially my sons. And someone showed me a South Park episode where I think it's Randy Marsh. They're watching an NFL game and something happens and he goes, what the fuck? Like same hand motion and yells, what the fuck? Now it wasn't like a direct reference to that, but it was an NFL game and he goes, what the fuck? And I'm like, that's gotta be at least partly inspired by me. So if I ever got to meet Trey or Matt, which would be a thrill, I would immediately be like, hey, do you remember that whole like what the fuck thing? That's me. Please tell me that like in some weird way that could have been an influence. I'd be so happy.
Have you ever seen the South Park creating of a South Park? They did this documentary and this was the human centipede episode that they walked through. I've never heard my dad. First of all, my dad watched that episode. I've never seen my dad laugh so hard in my entire life.
Have you ever seen the Bill Belichick cheating South Park? It's unbelievable.
Okay.
Interpreted the rules. It's it is a absolute classic. I will I'll try to send it to you after the taping.
Okay. Yeah, because we're approaching 50 minutes. I wanted to get to the whole Steve Kerr is my buddy, and then he grew up and he coached a dynasty, and you're very close with
we
Steve.
We can do that. I mean, in high school at Palisades High School in LA, we had a newspaper called the Tideline. We were right by the beach, the Palisades Tideline. My co-sports editor and I wrote a column called the Riptide, which lived down to its name. That co-sports editor was Steve Kerr. And the other interesting part of this is that I had been born in San Francisco, as I mentioned. I was a 49er fan. I was the only Warrior fan in my school. Like, I was known for the stain. All these Laker fans. Lakers were always great. I was a Warrior fan. So I got brutalized for being a Warrior fan by everyone, especially Steve Kerr. So he knows. He understands when I go to victory parties in Cleveland, and that was plural, when I show up at some of these things, when I get unbelievable texts from the head coach, you know, right after games that are not fit for public consumption, he knows he's talking to not only his boy who loves him and is so proud of him and yada, 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 but like, I actually suffered for 40 years of Warrior, ineptitude and futility. So now, like, I live every second of it, and I don't cover the NBA, so I don't have to. I'm allowed to be a fan, and yeah, I've had a lot of great moments. And you mentioned jobs. I've got a lot going. I'm really excited about. I formed a media company with one of your former NFL Network colleagues.
Hit me up. Metal Lark is down the street, you know?
Yeah, John Marvel and I formed Backstage Media, and we have a deal with Metal Lark, which John Skipper, man, I cannot tell you how much I love working.
I wanted to work. Guy. I listened to his when they started the Metal Lark Media, and there was a 4-hour, I was driving to I was driving to Washington, D.C., and I listened to every four-hour interview with John Skipper, and I said, I have to meet this man.
Yeah, I mean, honestly,
I
like,
you know that I think he is a phenomenal human being.
Now that I've actually, met him, I'm like, whoa, if I had met him earlier and gotten to know him, I would have tried really hard to work for him. And ESPN and I always had a weird, starting at the SI days, I got to SI in 94. So over the years, there were all these ESPN flirtations back and forth and potential things, and it just never felt right. But now that I've met him, I'm like, oh no, I would have wanted to work for that guy.
Yeah.
So we're doing unscripted stuff and audio and video, and John Marvel and I have some really exciting stuff coming. That's amazing. I'm working on a book that hopefully will become public pretty soon when I get a deal.
Okay.
I'm working at Bally Sports. That's my old Yahoo Sports boss, Dave Morgan, who is another guy I just adore working for. So I'm doing some national coverage for them still. And then I've got a deal at The Volume, Colin Cowherd, who has been an amazing source of support for me as I transition all this. I have a podcast called Open Mic on The Volume. That's his podcast network. That's me interviewing various NFL luminaries. The latest is me and Von Miller. It went an hour eight, so don't feel bad. And he's definitely a better guest than I am, but he was fantastic. So that's called Open Mic. And then Courtney, believe it or not, I have a really exciting, real gig that is in the works that will be announced very soon. And I think people are going to go, wait, really? But then they're going to go, oh, and I think people are going to get it. And I'm super pumped about it. So I can't quite let the cat out of the bag, but it involves the NFL and other things. And it's I'm going to be loud and conspicuous. So it's going to be really fun.
And that's just exactly who you are. Well, damn. I mean, like, I was the one that was checking in on you after you left the network. It's a share the love, man.
Oh, you know, Courtney, you know, you and I are going to work together again. We've known that since that morning. You did take the bus, but did show up. And I think we both know that there will be something where you and I are, you know, at least like making moves or, you know, working on the same project or something. Cause I just we have too much fun together and, you know, life is too short. Although in my case, it's much shorter than in your case.
Much shorter, especially while you're on the COVID hook right here.
Yeah, I made it. So, okay. Knock on wood.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, you know what I really loved about, there were so many great people. Although there's some snakes in the grass over there at that network.
Especially way up at the top of the lawn.
Yeah. And I mean, one of them just bit a former employee as well.
Hate to see it.
Yeah. I actually hate to see it too. Actually, I really don't care, but, that was like way too low pro.
I actually don't even know who it is.
I'll tell you off air. I'm assuming that I'm okay.
Dancing on anyone's grave who was.
Oh yeah, no, I, exactly.
Except
exactly.
For John Marvel, who left, who is my partner.
I love John Marvel. There's a lot of great people there, but I think that they also just appreciated the fact that, you and I were real sourcers. We got to it, and you made connections. You made front office connections and personnel, and that's the most important part about the business is relationships. So, it's no surprise that you are still thriving after the NFL.
I totally appreciate that. It looks like my printer is going off. I'm going to have to shout out to my wife in a different room deciding to print on your podcast.
She has
COVID right now. Let's give Leslie some sympathy.
Yeah, love and affection to the entire Silver family. Yeah,
in fact, I got a text during the podcast from one Natalie Silver that said, make sure to tell you hi. And that it sounds really fun that we're on a podcast, and I know she's a big fan. So
I love Natalie. Your daughter, Fat Nat Silver. She's like me. She gives zero fucks at all.
I'll tell you what, doing the Pass It Down podcast with her, which was me taking advantage of her when she was stuck in my house during the early days of the pandemic. But we did, I think almost 50 episodes together. We've been on hiatus because she's got a demanding job, and I don't want to add to it, but someday I hope to, or someday soon, I hope to revive Pass It Down. Because
Do it on StreamYard. I mean, listen, StreamYard is one of the best. This is one of the best platforms, and you can go automatically live on YouTube, on Twitter. I share it now with one of my producers, but I mean, Thieves Brands, it's great. I think it's the best. It's the best medium, especially, you know, for cross country ideas. And, you know, now I can host shows with some of my buddies who are halfway across the country.
Well, you're right. Metalark is right by you. So we need to hang in person soon. I definitely need to get out to, Metalark headquarters and see Dan Levitard and the whole crew. Amin, all those people. Billy Corbin, who is Metalark adjacent.
One of my, he is a longtime best friend, mentor.
I've never hung out with him. I had a phone call with him.
Well, oh, he loves bourbon too.
Our mutual friend Sage Rosenfeld set us up on the phone. And I was like, after talking on the phone to that guy for an hour, I'm like, I gotta hang out with him.
No, you, one of my long time friends.
And you did send me video of you and my BFF Uncle Luke, which, you know, rub it in a little bit. Like my, in fact, the Pass It Down podcast, the intro is Uncle Luke.
Okay. Yeah, I know. We tried to FaceTime you and you're like, sorry, I'm busy.
I was like, listen,
VIP, silver VIP.
I think I was doing some odious, like, professional thing that was going to get me in trouble if I had too much fun. But, or like watching a show with my wife who probably would have like strangled me. So for taking any call.
Either way.
Well,
thank you.
Courtney, it's been real. I have filibustered. I have sucked up airtime. I didn't tell you who's going to win the NFC West, but I do think.
Oh, yeah. Who's going to win the NFC West?
Really depends how good Trey Lance is. If Trey Lance is any good, it'll be the Niners. If not, it'll probably be the Rams, although they're very star heavy, which I like it. But like one injury could impact the Rams in a way that most teams, like, I mean, not just the Stafford, but Kupp, Jalen Ramsey, Aaron Donald, they're so star heavy. So I think the Rams, but if Trey Lance is as good as Kyle is hoping to make him, then I think they have the best, you know, comprehensive team. But quarterback switch is a real thing.
For sure. Poor D Ford. Injuries really derailed his
love team. That guy. Love him.
Yeah.
Love him.
Yep. All right, Mike. Thank you for your time. You better hand off. Uh-oh.
You have COVID. Did you get COVID over the
screen? I just got the COVID through the phone.
Awkward. Hold on. I'm going to put a mask on. So. All right.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.